lest we steal it from them. Okay? They've also studied this, the self-esteem movement, which is just brutal, what it does to these kids, because if you don't have real things to back up the self-esteem, then it does more harm than good. And they've just come to the studies on that because it's been happening long enough to be able to do studies on. All right, when and where? Because if it's true, it started somewhere. In the 1900s, there was the existentialist movement in Western Europe. And it really was this relativism that we live in right now, that your truth is good for you, but my truth is good for me. You know, and we did not adopt that until recently as a country. It's like that adage, you know, that they would say if you put a frog in warm water and you turn it up and it starts to boil, that the frog will still stay in it. I don't know if the frog really would do that, but it's interesting because I think that's where we sit right now. It's been a very long and slow process to get where we are, and it makes sense because we are a product of the beginnings of it, and so we don't know any different, really. So in the mid-1940s, there was a movement towards child-centric parenting, and there was a very well-meaning pediatrician whose name was Dr. Benjamin Spock, who you could go home and ask your mothers. Do you know who that is? Does anybody in this room know who that is? Okay, he wrote a book, and you want to know how many books he sold? Over 500 million copies. And his ideology was that a child-centric home is the best way to have it, where everyone focuses on the child, and self-esteem is what's important. You got to build them up. Tell them how great they are. You know, and everyone needs to focus on them. I will never forget in Wichita Falls, Texas, being with my mother in the bookstore, and she saw that book, and she was just my mother wasn't a Christian even at that point. She came to know the Lord at the Billy Graham Crusade in the 1970s, and I remember standing with her, and that book was sitting there, and she went and turned them all around. She did. Isn't that funny? I had no idea what it was, and I remember asking her, and she was like, "That's a bad book." And her, so you know what kind of home I grew up in. And all her friends were reading that book, and she had read it, and it really bothered her. And so she didn't like it, and she didn't want anybody else buying it, which I thought was so interesting. We had what came along with that were child labor laws, because we also had this term teenager come into vogue that had never existed before, because we didn't really have secondary education until the 1920s. When we started to think that it wasn't right that a 12-year-old would be put out of the house and expected to work, or expected to work within the home. And so we started this idea of high school, and that was where the term teenager was really born. And so you had this period, and it's so fascinating to think about it, because anybody that has a teenager, you sort of go, oh, it explains a lot, because they really could be working at 12, and quite frankly, they should be working. And when we don't let them, there's a lot of pent-up something that they don't really know what to do with, and none of us really know what to do with, because it's like, you know, this jarring, because they want to be independent and they want to be in control, but they're not ready to do that, but they need to be doing something productive, okay? More productive than school. Because in their mind, the school thing isn't working. It's like, well, you have to do that. But there's not something on the other side of that, because they can't see that yet. You know, they can't touch it. And so it's an interesting thing that we've done. It's like, now why would you do that? And now a 14-year-old, good luck finding your 14-year-old a job, unless you live in some little podunk West Texas town. I have begged at the Tom Thumb, like, please. And I'm like, you don't have to pay them. I will just drop them off, you know? And then I look around the grocery store at like the mean old lady over there, and I'm like, yes, let him bag her groceries. You know, and I'm like, just put the milk on top of the grapes and have her yell at you. You know, it will do you good. Because it would do them good, because they would realize there are people in this world and it matters. But no, they still won't do it. I've tried. I tried at the, gosh, what I would give at the mechanic, you know? I begged that one too. I was like, we'll sign any waiver. I don't care. Just put him under a car, you know? Let him learn how to change oil. It didn't go very far either. But I've tried. And that's why they call me Mean Mom, because they do. You're so mean. That's what my children say. Okay, so it starts at home with great intentions, because we've been groomed to think that this is the way we are supposed to parent, because guess what? Everybody actually is doing it. I mean, it's not like a jump off the bridge thing. It's actually what everybody's doing. And it's not helpful, But we're realizing now it's not helpful because we have this generation of kids that's now being termed as narcissists, which is so sad because they're great kids. You know, what a shame. These are capable, smart. Oh my word, they know how to use these things. It's like the cure for cancer is involved in these people. So why not equip them to be able to go do all the things we could never do because we can't begin to relate to the boundaryless lives that they live. Because when we were growing up, it wasn't boundaryless. You know, there was no internet. You only knew about the rest of the world really through the news and through newspapers and whatever you read. It's not like, you know, they have friends everywhere. We didn't. And it's so, why not use that? It's so, to me, it's like the excitement. Why not equip them? Really? And so the trend in the U.S. away from the American dream, y'all, the American dream says that you can come to this country and have the opportunity to do anything that you can think of. And the key word in that is opportunity. And the problem today is that we've added a couple of words to that, that you're owed or you deserve. And the truth of the matter, that is never a part of it. But it is at the tip of the tongue of all of these kids. Well, I'm owed it. I deserve it. Gosh, it wears me out. One of mine the other day, the one about to go in college, he's like, well, you're going to pay for my education. And I was sitting there going, what? You know, I was like, on what planet is that like a given? And why would you assume that? But it's like they think that, well, this is going to happen. I'm going to get these shoes. Everybody else has those shoes, you know, so I'm going to have those shoes. And so then you have a child that's like 10 that may have grown quickly that is in an adult-sized shoe, and you have to pay $80 for a pair of shoes that you know they're going to grow out of in about 3 months because everybody else has them. And then it's like, you know, do you know what I'm saying? And it's like, well, of course I have to have that because they do. And they have this, and that's the entitlement sense that they have, and it's a shame. And there's, if you like reading at all, there's an article Arthur Brooks. It's so fascinating. It's in the Wall Street Journal, and it's called Learned Helplessness versus Earned Success. And there was a sociologist that did a study on learned helplessness. His name was Martin Seligman. And he went with people, and he watched what happened when they got things for free and when they had to actually do something to get something. And what it does actually to the mind by getting things for free is so dangerous compared to what it does for someone to do something and earn it and be able to use it. And it's a compelling article that's worth reading, I think. It goes along these lines where he says, in general, it's better to praise the behavior rather than the individual. If you praise the individual, he fails, then it causes shame and inadvertently sends the message that they're a bad person instead of the act being good or bad. And what Mr. Seligman said is, he says, the link between earned success and life satisfaction is well established by researchers. The opposite of earned success is learned helplessness, a term coined by Martin Seligman. And he says, it refers to what happens if rewards and punishments are not tied to merit. People simply give up and stop trying to succeed. Okay? It's fascinating. And there you see, and people love to joke about it, but it's sort of not funny of all the kids that are moving back home as adults. And then you have, it's like this perfect storm because it's coming from everywhere. You've got it coming from the government that says, we want you, we're giving you something, we're so happy because guess what, you can stay on your parents' insurance until you're 26 years old, wah! You know, and the implied message is pretty crummy, that you can't do it, so we have to have this so that you can be on your parents' insurance until you're 26 years old. But it's like heralded at a college commencement. And it's a bad message, that implied one, you know? And then we have schools that are kind of doing the same thing because the parents have been so forceful that the schools can't stop. So in this great state of Texas, do you know that your kid can't receive below a 50 until after seventh grade? You know? And teachers, who's a teacher in here? We love you. I'm serious. Don't stop. I can't imagine. Because, you know, use a red pen. Happy day on that. You'll lose your job over that. You know? Because some, well, that's never going to, that might hurt their feelings. And because we're racing in all the time. And it's such a shame because when that happens and when parents are checking every single homework before it comes in and tell me if this is true, how do you ever know what the kid has learned? You don't. How does a teacher do that? But as parents, we feel like we have to. Do you? I know at our schools, there's like a lot of pressure because you don't want your kid going in and having a, you know, a C next to an A or a B next to an A, because they sure all ask. Okay, so, yeah, you didn't know you were going to be talked to for so long. Yeah, 7:39. Do we have questions? I'm just kidding. I'm not quite done. Are y'all sick of me yet? This is like the longest tape they will ever have. It'll be like the three-tape series. Terrible. Yeah, no one will be listening. Why can't we stop ourselves? Why don't we stop ourselves? We always use the same excuses. I don't have time. There's not enough time, all right? It is so much easier just to do it myself. It is so much easier, isn't it? And then you don't have to listen to the whining, because the whining, it wears me out. By the way, BTW, it does not stop. I don't know why. All right, so fear is a huge one. I think we are so afraid that they're going to fail, that we have to race in and save them and help them, because what would happen if they fail? Actually, really good things would happen if they fail, believe it or not. It's, you know, you can go look at the failure, the history of failure, and it's failure that has started some great businesses. Failure is why you have lights on. Because he failed so many times, he kept trying. Because failing means you get back up. Did your kid ever fall when they were riding a bike? Really, when they learned how to ride a bike? Yes, what'd you do? You let them. Because what would happen if they were like a mile away and they had fallen and they couldn't get back up because they didn't know how to get back up? They'd be in trouble, and you would never do that. And we do not see parents running alongside a teenage bicycle rider these days. They're good to go, because that would be embarrassing. But so would being at the college campus talking to your kid's professor. I'm just saying. So we're afraid that they might fail. And here as a Christian, it's like, oh my gosh, you've got the answer to this one, because what does the Lord tell us about fear? He says, don't. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. How many times? 365. Yeah, isn't that neat? And then guess what he says after it? Almost every single time after, he says, for I am with you. I am with you wherever you go. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I am. Do you get who the I am is? Because that's where we've got to go. Because if we don't get why not to be afraid, then we might be confused about who it is that says don't be afraid. Because the one that says don't be afraid is the one that created this place, is the one that told the ocean where to stop, is the one that knows every hair on your head, knows every thought that you think, knows every tear that you cry, every laugh that comes out of your mouth. He knows you intimately because you are his. Every sinew, every cell, every part of you, you are his. He knows you. And he's the one that says, by the way, don't be afraid. You don't have to be afraid. And he says, I have prepared in advance things for you, for each one of us, all of us. For you, I know you. I know the plans that I have set forward for you. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Do you really believe it? Sort of. You know, some days. Not always. Please help me believe. And that's how beautiful he is. Because do you remember the guy that came to him and he said, would you please heal my daughter? She's dying. And he said, do you believe that I can? And he said, help me with my unbelief. Now, what did the Lord do? Did he was he like, nah, so not doing that. Sorry, gotta believe. No, he did, and he does. When those disciples were on the boat and that storm came in and it was so horrible, who was sleeping on the boat? Jesus was. He had said when he got on, we're going from this side to that side. He knew exactly what was gonna happen. And they're freaking out, and they have the Lord of the universe laying with them asleep in a boat in the middle of a storm, and they say, help us. And he says the word and it's calm. Because that's who he is. He wasn't asking more of them. He didn't say, well, if you were scared, sorry, not going to do it. Nope, done. Sorry, you big losers. You've been with me forever and you just don't even, you can't see. No, he's gentle that way. It's so beautiful. At the end of Luke, the disciples still aren't getting it. And at the end of Luke, it's so beautiful because the Lord, he opens their mind to understand Scripture. When he's leaving, because he loves them. He loves you. And he loves those kids. And he didn't give them to you by accident. Okay? We're tapped into the good stuff. Do you believe it? It changes the way you do everything if you do. And if you don't, And I don't mean like if you don't, some blanket if you don't. We all struggle with that. The beautiful thing about Scripture is that it's story after story after story after story of His truth. I am true. Everything I say is true. I never, ever change. I don't work like you do. I don't work like the world does. I don't think like you do. I don't operate like this place. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. And when you do that, we breathe. Okay? And it's a constant reminder. I have to do it all the time because of a 17-year-old, you know? Because of a 15-year-old, because of this, so much stuff. Okay, so fear, uber parents, the competitive parenting thing is so bizarro. Why we compete against each other? What's up with that? I don't understand. You know, you don't even have people over to eat anymore because it's like, well, if they come over, everything has to be organically, locally grown, and what's the other one? It's got to be gluten-free, and it's got to look great because thanks. Thank you, Pinterest, because it's like you can't even serve grapes on a plate anymore. It has to be on a skewer and look like Minnie Mouse or something. Yeah, I mean, it's just pathetic because everybody might judge you. And Martha Stewart, shame on you, because you have to have some beautiful floral presentation too. So anyway, it's strange. And so we compete, do weird things with each other, even with our great friends, because we might not tell them we were in that carpool because I wanted to be in the carpool. Okay, trust. It's that whole thing. I don't know if I trust, but if I really trust the one that says don't be afraid, it's a good thing, and it'll take us a long way. Why must we stop ourselves? Kids thrive on high expectations, just like you do. If the bar's up here, guess where the kid's going? Right there, really and truly. I mean, it just is. Unless you have some crazy, amazing kids. If it's down here, they're going down there. But they love the expectation. They do not believe in themselves. They don't. I don't. Do you? I mean, really, we question ourselves all the time. Kids for sure don't believe in themselves. That's one of the most fun roles of a parent, is to believe in your child more than they do. And say the words often, yes, you can, even when it's a ridiculous thing. You know, I had it today. One of them wanted chocolate milk, the 7-year-old, chocolate milk. Will you go get it for me? No. You know, please, I can't. So I'm like, yes, you can. And he's like, I can't. You know, and then he stops and he's like, this stirring thing is fun. And it's like, so history. Training, we talked about that. Training is teaching, showing them how, getting the heck out of the way. That's a big part of it. And our homes, believe it or not, your home is a societal test tube for what is to come. Whatever you teach them in there, if you get them good where they know how to do it, and it's exhausting, but if you really do it, then think of what they can do on the other side. They won't expect anyone to do it for them. What a gift. And it's so cool. The folks that I know that have had college kids that are like this, their kids, you know, I'm not expecting a letter, but I will say that I'm hoping for one. You know, one of those that's like, thanks, Mom, for being so mean. It's so wonderful. I really appreciate you making me do all my laundry. You know, that kind of thing. I don't really think it'll happen, but it might. But the cool thing with these kids that come back that have had to do all that, none of their friends knew how to. And so they're the ones that are doing it for everybody. Which is so neat because it seeds in them independence, confidence. You can do so much more than you thought you could. You are equipped to do great things. And it takes off the table the menial tasks so that they can do so much more than just the stuff that is life. Okay? So consider the attitudes that you're grooming. It's one of those things, are we grooming independence or dependence? And I think about that a lot. Am I going for the dependence? Because sometimes it's easier. It just is. Or am I going for independence? Independence, independence, all the time. Go for that one, because that's what you're there for. Because you can do it. Because you love them more than anybody else does, so you're not going away. Out of love, responsibility puts meat on the bones of I know you can. And I've told my kids, you know, they're like, why do I have to do this? This is so horrible, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, because I love you. Like the daughter tonight, I love you. Don't do that. How? This is to get into the nitty-gritty. How do you do it? Because I know that you all probably wish this was 45 minutes ago that I started with the how. But how do you do it? I got friends around me when I was so mad that day. And I got older people that had walked the road. And I called an older woman who I did not even know, but I knew that she was very wise. And I said, if you're going to start something new in your house, how do you do it? And she said, the first thing you have to do is set up a plan. And the second thing you have to do is involve your children. She said, have a family meeting and involve your children. And by that, she said, I'm not telling you, ask them if they want to do it. I'm saying to you, tell them what you were doing and then let them decide how you were doing it. And so we did. You know, we had this family meeting. I'd come up with 12 things that I thought we needed to know in our house. And then we sat down and I was like, this month is going to be clutter control. How do you want to do that? The kitchen, that was the big one for us, cooking meals. And the kids got to decide how they did it. And when they do that, they own it. Because that is so critically important in their lives for them to own their life. It is very hard for a helicopter parent to let go, okay? But it is critically important for a child to own their life. You want them to, you know? Because they can do this stuff. So we began with a family meeting. The kids owned it. And we made this stuff doable. And by that, I mean, different ages really can do different things. But I'm telling you, young kids can do so much more than you think they can. A three-year-old actually can use a sharp knife, you know? And it makes them feel so good. When they're cutting strawberries with a sharp knife and they can do it, they respect it if you teach them how to respect it. There could be accidents. I'm just going to be honest with you. We had an accident this week that involved a little trip to the ER because my very excited child got out. Why there were like shears in our, you know, in the drawer in the kitchen, I don't know. But he got out these huge scissors to open a box of chips because we are not organic or locally grown in our house. In fact, one time I had a little thing of carrots on the dinner table. The little ones, and one of my kids picked one up and put it in his mouth, and he was chewing it. He was like, and he looked at me, and he was chewing it, and he goes, "Man, this is the most disgusting Cheeto ever." Yes, we set the bar low, people. So my little one, we got out the scissors, and he was cutting, and he looked up, and he really did. He went through his fingers. And so we got to go to the ER, which, you know, with boys, I'm just saying, we've been there a lot. Not for that, but anyway, I sat there thinking, because in that moment of not enjoying 1 second of that child crying, I mean, because it cuts you to the core, you know, and it hurts me. And I was like, oh, should I never let him use the scissors? I should. They should have been put away. So, and I was like, no, don't go there. Don't go there. He knows. Because in my head, I was like, he knows how to use the scissors. We've walked through that. He knows how to, you know, and it was like, yes. And then I was like, there are accidents, okay? And so I'm not saying it's a free-for-all, like let your kids swim because they know how to swim. I'm saying let them respect and then let them test. He will have a new respect for those scissors that he's never had before. It wasn't a big deal. They got the glue out and just glued it. It was really, but there comes the fine line of walking this road. Is it worth it for you? You know? And there goes your family. Because Dave said at the beginning, different people, different things. You're going to have different boundaries, different barriers. And there's so much great stuff to learn in that too. Incentive and reward. We provided reward for our kids. We actually provided financial incentive for our children because we were starting so low. And I have gotten flack for that a little bit. We put together jars where they had money in the jar, and every day they did their task, they earned whatever it was in the jar, and they got to keep it. And if they didn't do their task, money was taken away, which actually proved to be a huge incentive. Who knew that losing something was more incentive than gaining something? It's actually a stock market theory. And I know, isn't that fascinating? I actually have an MBA. I don't know where I was in school then. It was probably like health class. Where was I then? I don't know. That was just a gimme from another friend. And it was interesting to watch them because when we provided that reward, we also put on their plate everything they would buy. And not everything, you know, for the food and stuff like that. But if they wanted Crayola Magic, happy day. You can have Crayola Magic. Use your own money. And it was so fun to watch them learn how to manage their money. And I had three, you know, one for tithing, one that they got to keep, one that they got to save, because we wanted them to learn. And then you introduce to them something that they will have to learn in their lifetime, how to manage their money. And it was money they were earning, which meant a lot more to them than allowance, which I'm terrible at that anyway, which, I, you know, that's so fell by the wayside because I can't remember to do it. And then I would take it all, I'm just saying, maybe, and I would forget. forget to give it back, which I'm just going to admit here too, that maybe the jars fell by the wayside about month six, because again, I might have taken all the money and forgotten to put it back. We tried everything too. We tried the jars where they could see, then I set up accounts for them. And this was interesting to me. They did better with the money that they could see. When it was just put into their account, they didn't do very well with it. There was something about the touching of the money that made it, they really never spent it. You know, they never spent it. I'll never forget going to Michael's with one of the kids and watching him figure out the best deal in Michael's with the Michael's helper guy was just unbelievable, to the point where the Michael's guy at the end when we were leaving was calling all the employees around to show them how this kid scouted out the best deal because he was 8 years old. And it was fascinating. And then to watch the kid in the back seat of the car looking at his ticket and going, what is TAX? I was like, oh, honey, welcome to life. Sorry about that. The consistency is helpful, but I'm just telling you, I'm a loser, terrible at it. So even just putting one foot in front of the other, in front of the other is just so important and such a gift to your kids. And don't ever do anything alone. Grab friends and go, you know, walk it with you. This is so hard to see, but there are great websites that have creative ways to do chore things in your house. That one on the right were these neat little nickels, those wooden nickels that had chores on them with the amount so that if a kid is bored, because I know you're here because your kids are bored and they're like, I'm bored, and you need stuff for them to do during the day, put jobs on your refrigerator that have, you know, besides the stuff that you want them to do, where they can earn money. You know, and part of the earning money is you looking at it or dad looking at it when he gets home or whatever world it's in. If it's, you know, you guys divide it out and have them earn money for doing tasks that you would like them to do, that they would do a good job. There are games that you can play. There's this gal that has sticks in the jar for when her kids say, I'm bored, they have to pull out a stick and do whatever it is. So that does stop the I'm bored part. There was a mom up at the front, and this was huge this week. I don't know if any of y'all read any of the blogs or articles that go around, but there's a mom, I don't know where she's from, it's called the Narrow Back Slacker, and she has decided that she is letting her children have as much screen time as they want after they do a whole list of things. And it says these are not guidelines, they are rules. And so she's put it up there. And it includes things like reading and doing their chores and all this kind of stuff. And you know what's happened? It goes away. Because you feel better when you're actually doing something productive. Go figure. Okay? So I thought those were interesting. Y'all might like those. These I'm skipping because these are tasks that were you can go on the moatblog.com and all the tasks that we did. We did the kitchen, laundry, handyman, I wanted them to learn how to do that. I wanted them to learn how to clean a bathroom, like really clean it with Lysol and all that kind of stuff, because that happens. And all of it. I made them run errands. We had a month of service where they had to serve every single day. They had to serve, and some of them were big, some of them were little. And manners. I felt like they don't have manners. Really, kids don't do that anymore. And here's the beautiful thing about work and everything in your house. All this stuff. It was in the garden before it became toil, by the way, okay? When the Lord created Adam, he put him there to tend the garden. Work is there because it's good for you. It's in you. It is a part of what you were created to do. It's part of that I've prepared something in advance for you to do. And we made it toil when we started to make it about ourselves, all right? And so in work, they're serving somebody else. It's always someone on the receiving end. And it's fascinating because in your house, you have all these opportunities for them to serve and love each other, your kids, or if you have one child, to do it with you, okay? Because when they learn how to fold laundry, it's somebody's laundry that they're folding. And if they don't wash that laundry, there is a problem. You know, there won't be clothes. And so they learn the practical aspects of this stuff. When they cook and have to cook this stuff, you know, they start out and they're like, this is horrible. You're so mean. None of my friends have to cook. Oh, you're horrible. Until they start doing it, and then they stop complaining, and then not only are they cooking just to cook the meal, they actually have to consider the person eating it, you know, and they have to think about it. And then they make the food so that someone might like it because they don't want to sit at a table, everybody's complaining, which really we are the only ones that everyone sits at the table and they're like, this is horrible. okay? And that's in your house for free. Why do we have to do it? What message are you sending your kids, okay? Independence or dependence? Are they seeing obstacles or opportunities? Because you can either have them see these problems that arise as something that's going to stop them or something that they get to get over, all right? And they look, they want to do the next thing. They want to succeed. When they do something they didn't think they could do, they look for the next thing they didn't think they could do. They can't stop themselves, all right? Embracing the secret sauce of life, which is loving others, not yourself, all right? Consider the alternative versus the potential. Really, the alternative stinks. The potential is exciting. Changing one home can change a generation. That's why we do inner city kid programs, because it is proven that if you can get one kid to change, if you get one kid to go to college, do you know what happens to the rest of the people following after that kid? It's changed. It's the same with this too, because sometimes I think we feel like we can't breathe. We look at this stuff and it's like, too much. We can't do it. How do I do it? How do I not go in and save my kid? How do I not fill out that college application? How do I not, you know? It's hard. Pick and choose those battles, you know? Because the kid is really worth it. They're really worth it. There was a quote at the bottom of that that said, passion doesn't fuel work ethic. Work ethic fuels passion, which I think is so interesting. Okay, here's one last video for you. I can't get it to go. There you go. It's from The Office.
The building's custodian is on vacation for the month, and Dwight is too cheap to hire a replacement. So instead, we're living in filth, but not for long, because I have created the chore wheel.
Oh, yeah. Can I spin first?
Well, it doesn't spin. We'll just move the wheel one notch each morning, and you see what chore you get that day.
A wheel is supposed to spin.
Yeah. You know, like g-g-g-g-g-g-g-g-g-g-g-g-g-g.
No, I'm familiar with spinning. It's just that wouldn't work with a chore wheel because people might get the same chore.
Bah, boring. All she talks about is chores.
A wheel wants to spin, Pam.
Spinning would be more fun.
Okay.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Big money, big money. Yeah! Mug duty?
Yes, you clean all the mugs in the sink.
This sucks.
Seriously, it's like everything on there's work.
I don't think you guys understand why we're doing this.
And I don't think that you understand wheels.
I've been through several rounds of development with the team, and here's where we stand with the chore wheel. We've got prizes. $10, candy bar, manager for an hour. But there are also penalties, like no internet, Stanley gets your lunch. The one thing that is not on the chore wheel is chores. But they were right, it's more fun this way. The tiny wheel actually does have chores. It's so cute, no one seems to mind.
It's just so funny. Thank you guys so much for listening. And I don't know if we have time for questions, but I'm happy to answer any questions. Anyone? Bueller? Yes. You know, the book is really the good, the bad, the ugly. I'm just telling you. It really is our story through this attempt to really get rid of the entitlement stuff. And some of it worked, some of it didn't work. Happy to share it all, which I did, and all of it's in there. So, anybody else? When we started, I definitely let them do it badly, and then we moved on. And I think that goes with depending on which kid, you know, because like one of them still today, the perfect bed thing, even then, perfect. I just, it's like every family is different. I don't care. I want it done, and I don't care. But there are some things that I really care about, that I want it done well. So we had to go down that road of what doing it is and what doing it well is. And It goes to that whole thing. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well, okay? And did your dad ever say that? My dad always said that. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. And we'd be like, oh, my gosh, here we go again. Well, I'm so glad he said that, you know? I'm so glad he never let us quit. I'm so glad he let us fail all the time. What a gift. And I look back, and I'm grateful for that. And in those moments, I think, I really do. I sometimes go, are we going to be in counseling over this? And then I'll go, maybe they will be making fun of me as we do my parents, but I don't really care because they know it's that fun stuff that you get to make fun of. And I've watched them. I'll never forget pulling up to the carpool line, and it happened to be the 8-year-old's chance to make dinner that night. And he was telling his friend and the carpool monitor, oh, I have to make dinner tonight. It is just, oh, have you ever had to? And he's just like complaining. And he got in the car, and he was so proud of himself. And I thought, that is the funniest thing I've ever seen. And if he knew that I knew, oh, it would be so bad. But they know, and it's fun to watch them do more than they think they can and actually do it well. And here's another thing that's interesting. As I would put different things on their plates, I got to see who was good at different things, which when we do it ourselves for them, we tend to do it like we would do it. And so the kid is lost in that. And it's fascinating to me how they do it differently. They really operate differently. One of my children, give her what she needs to do for the whole week, you know, and then say, have it done. By the end of the week, have it done. She is so happy. But if you say, you need to go do that right now, it's like the grizzly bear comes out. There must be something in that aptitude, that way she thinks, that she needs that to be a part of the process for her. She gets it done, and she gets it done well. I have another one that is spot on. She cannot take the thought of having something hanging over her head. And so if she has to do something, she wants to know so she can get it done. And the boys, you know, one of them loves the outside. We very happily give that child every bit of garbage duty. They all know how to do the garbage. And as we've gone down the road, I've had to back off. You know, come on, back off, come on, back off. And then not give in to my problems of, like, it's got to be done a certain way. Like this is the answer. Because I think we want that. It's like, oh, yes, entitlement is the problem. If I get this, then it's all okay. No, you know, no. It's just a part of the way that it works, okay? And so it's something that we work on not to be good at it. And that's hard for me, like going around speaking, because you could come into my house right now and you could see one child that has been given over to himself, and his room is just disgusting. And I'm not sure, you know, if he changed clothes today. He might have, I'm not quite sure. And one of mine went to vacation Bible school, and he went through the laundry. I don't even know where he found that shirt. It was just, it was like nastiness all over it. And I was like, son. But you know what? They learn as they go through these things. And I sit in my mind and I think, what is the purpose? Okay, are they proficient? Do they know how? Are they equipped? Yes, yes, yes. Okay, then we get into the longevity. Okay? And so it's not about looking or being a certain way, because that'll suck the air out of you too. Do you know what I mean? I don't think any of this is meant to suck the air out of us. I actually think it's meant to give us life. And it really does. It's fascinating. I remember sitting on my couch questioning myself at one point, and then I was like, I'm sitting on my couch because I hadn't sat down, and I don't know how. And somebody was scurrying, cleaning the kitchen. I was like, oh, my gosh, what is this? It was like, whoa. And I thought, this is what it's about, is them being involved. And when they belong in your house, oh, my goodness, you want to know why they look at this thing? Because all they want to do is belong. That's it. They just want to be somebody. And when they belong in your home, the volume of this thing is turned down. I have 5 very different personalities, and I can tell you this is a very minor piece of equipment in our house. Is that a coincidence? I don't know. But they want to know that they've landed somewhere. And you have it all in your home to let them know they belong with you. They are needed. They're functioning. They have something to offer. And then you take it right to where they really belong. This is just a taste. You don't have any idea. You know what I mean? Because that's always available.